Good evening and welcome to Outsources, a weekly KGNU program that provides you with content related to queer communities in Colorado. I'm your host, Elise Manitol, and earlier this week I had a virtual hang with two of my dear friends, Susie Grishpol and Kelly Drumright. They're part of my queer community here in Colorado, and we got to talk about zines, somatics, and pleasure activism, an idea that we've been gathering around for the last couple of years that's really about making social justice work sustainable and irresistible. Take a listen. Thanks for joining me. Okay, would you both introduce yourselves briefly? You can say your name, pronouns, and some of the hats you wear in the community. And I'll start with Kelly, just because you're a host with KGNU's Outsources too.
Hi, everyone. I'm Kelly, Dr. Kelly Drumright. In some circles, to some people, they, them. Pronouns. I am a Gemini, Gremlin, cultural worker, educator. I don't know. Recently learned the term family abolition, so that's resonating. I think I sent you guys that article. but yeah, I wear a lot of hats in the community. Some of it is paid work. Some of it's care work that's unpaid and invisibilized. But yeah, I'm excited to be here. Also a host with Outsources. And mostly I'm going to be here, like, amplifying Susie, our incredible guest, and letting them shine their cosmic light all over everyone.
Excellent. Okay, Susie, now your turn.
Wow, what an intro. Hi, friends. I'm Susie. I use they, them pronouns. Let's see what to say about myself. In true Gemini form, I have lots of dualistic things that I do in my life. In my day job life for a living, I do software development, product management for nonprofits, making cool tech stuff on the internet for the revolution. And when I'm not doing that, I'm a burlesque performer. Am I allowed to say that? Burlesque drag. My alter burlesque ego is Laika Fox. That's L-A-I-K-A, like the space dog, Fox. And yeah, I'm really into burlesque as a form of expressing body liberation and sexual liberation and like being a living version of the world that I want to see on stage and transmitting that energy out to an audience of people who are yelling nice things at me. So... and clapping and loving
sometimes
me.
Giving you money.
yeah, throwing nice things at me, like money. Like literally the only thing I want thrown at me.
And you get to glow up and glam up and sparkle up.
Yeah, fam up. Real amazing. Real hard. I'm also a producer of a burlesque and variety show called The Body Political that is all about reclaiming our own body in the face of a world that wants to tell you things about yourself that you then internalize and dim your light because of, and that's all nonsense and we need less of that. So basically what I do on stage, I wanted to create a space for other people to do that on stage. And so that's thebodypolitical.com. You can check us out. Yeah. During the pandemic, I have been spending a lot of time. Well, even pre-pandemic, our beloved prophet, Adrienne Marie Brown, wrote this amazing book called Pleasure Activism that we are all big, big stands of. And I think she was the first person to articulate what I have always, well, not always, but maybe in some core part of my subconscious always known, which is that we won't get to a better world just by fighting the current one, that we have to like dream into the world that we want to create, and pleasure and joy and connection and love and all that good stuff is a huge part of that. And so that really kind of like set me off on like, oh, there's other people like this out there. And Kelly and Elise were both founding members of the Pleasure Activism Book Club back in the day, which was just a fun little like social club we all put together in which we'd meet on a semi-regular basis and just do pleasurable things and maybe talk about the book here and there. But book clubs stress me out. So I was trying to make it pretty low key.
I think we succeeded. Yeah. It was such a great experience.
It was. And maybe it'll come back in another form someday. Yeah. And also through the pandemic, I also realized that my love of dance and performance extended beyond, well, this is something I've been thinking about for a long time, but extended beyond just my own performance, and I decided I wanted to become a dance teacher. So I'm currently in school at MSU to become a dance teacher, and I'm exploring various ways of doing that in the community and wanting to inspire the next generation and be the role model, the like chubby, non-binary role model that I wish I had all those things. Chubby, queer, hairy, all the things for all the sweet
my
little
inner
dancers.
Child is healing hearing you say this.
Right?
It's incredible.
That's a random scattering of my life at this moment.
So many things. Well, and you're right, the duality of like being sort of an expert running this nonprofit, and now you're a student.
Yes.
Learning different things.
Lifelong learner, for sure. Yeah. And I also, the main duality I think that I was pointing to was like, I do a lot of stuff in a very abstract place called the internet, where like there's just no somatic resonance whatsoever. And I love it, but I also struggle with it. And so the pandemic really like kicked me into gear of like, oh God, I'm dissociating so hard from my body. This is really, really dangerous. So trying to find more ways to spend time in my body.
Well, I was thinking about, so you have gone through this process trying to think about your own body, thinking about somatics, thinking about pleasure. And it seems like that has now morphed into another project, a zine that you're working on. Do you want to share about the zine?
Sure. So this zine is called Spark Fire. And it actually came out of a school project, and I was taking this really amazing class at MSU, and it was a whole class about somatics and injury prevention, and it was great because we were just talking about the dance world and how it's just like so ableist and so like you just have to grind your body into the ground and then maybe you'll find something else to do with your life. Like dancers are just seen as very like disposable commodities, yada yada yada. And so this whole concept of like somatics and injury prevention and listening to your body and starting from the inward feeling of your experience in your body and then moving outward from there and having boundaries and, you know, knowing what is challenging in a good way that's like helping you build strength and endurance and what is literally breaking you blew my mind. And we had this final project where we could basically just take the materials that we're learning in class and apply it to a passion project of any kind. And since I had been kind of like thinking about pleasure activism and, you know, all this stuff is just like always on my mind, I was like, from early on in the class, actually, before I started thinking about this project, I was like, oh yeah, somatics, that's such a core part of like bodily autonomy.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Outsources on KGNU, Boulder, Denver. I'm your host, Elise Matatal, and I've been speaking with Outsources co-host, Kelly Drumright, and our dear friend and pleasure activist, Susie Grishpol.
Can you just break down a little bit what somatics is?
Yes.
Maybe just do like a bird's eye view.
100%.
Really quick for folks who might not be familiar. I mean,
yes.
We're kind of dancing around it, but
yeah.
I'd love to hear your take on it. Oh my God. Unintended pun.
Yes, thank you so much. I had no idea what somatics was before like a year ago. Thanks, Kelly. So somatics is basically, I think I actually have a definition of this in my zine, but someone said it better than I have. Okay. Somatics is a field within bodywork and movement studies which emphasizes internal physical perception and experience. There's this really awesome group in the Bay Area called Generative Somatics, and the definition is somatics works through the body, individual and collective, and engages our thinking, emotions, vision, and action. It is a resilience-based method that helps us change embodiment or shape, moving from reaction and increasing choice. It acknowledges the deep wisdom in our survival strategies and adaptations and offers many ways to transform what's become automatic and no longer serves us. So it's basically connecting with your body's wisdom and learning how to listen to your body. I think a lot of times we only listen to our body when it's like crying for help and not necessarily sooner. Or even listening to our body when it's giving us good feedback either. Or, you know, we live in such a shame-based culture that's where a lot of pleasure activism comes from, is like feeling good does not have to be bad, full stop, right? And so, yeah, it's learning to trust that, that deep wisdom that all of your lived experiences in your body have to offer you, and then learning how to tune into that.
Susie, what else do you want to say to people about your zine and what it explores? Is there anything else? I kind of halted you in the middle of
Oh, that's okay. Day. I know. I was like, where was I? Yeah, so I was taking this class on somatics, and we were talking about specifically how it applies to injury prevention, listening to your body, what it needs, how to take care of it and be in relationship with it and not be in an antagonistic relationship with it. Yeah, and we had this project of like, what is this bringing up for you? And one of the things I've been thinking about a lot as, oh, I forgot to mention that I've also been like a hobbyist sex educator and sex nerd person for a long time in various communities. And yeah, so one of the things I've been thinking about a lot is this concept of consent, which I did a lot of research on consent for this zine. And I always just feel like consent like isn't enough, and it feels very like transactional. And one of the cool things that I learned in doing research for this zine was that even the concept of consent that we're bringing to, you know, sex ed and fighting rape culture and all this kind of stuff, you know, we had to start somewhere. We had to start somewhere. We started at like the lowest possible bar. Like even the concept of consent that we use is taken from medical practices where it's like, I need you to sign your consent on this form, AKA signing away your liability or my liability if I harm you, right? Which is so messed up. It's like, well, you said I could do it, so you're bad, you know? And then we're trying to apply that to sex and relationships and intimate contact with people. And it just feels very like, can I do this to you? Can you do this to me? Like this very transactional. And, you know, people have all these interesting questions about consent where it's like, well, do I have to ask consent for everything? Like where, you know, and that's what's hard about it is that it feels very one-sided. And it's like, yeah, it's like one person wants to do something to another person, so they ask their consent, as opposed to, and this is where I was like kind of going with this scene, I was like, oh, what if we start from a place where both people are empowered to bring their desires to each other and explore the space where those desires overlap, as opposed to, like buying into this narrative that one person is always trying to get something out of the other person, and the other person, all they have is the gatekeeping of their own bodies to let people in or out, like hoping that the other person respects their boundaries, right? So, yeah, so I went on this whole deep dive, and at first I thought it was going to be about just about consent and somatics, like listening to your body for what consent feels like. And then I was like, no, we got to go farther. Like, we got to like lean into this expansive world of like, but what do you want? And I tell a little bit of like my own personal journey in the zine, but maybe we get to that in a little bit.
Well, can you share like what is the format of the zine? And we are all maybe millennials who know what a zine is, but I wonder how many listeners have not encountered zines, or like why zines are this sort of cool political thing too. If you want to share a little, either of you want to share a little bit about zines, because I think they're such a cool and unique format for this type of learning and like sharing of knowledge.
Yeah, they can be such a like a Kelly here. Hello, they can be such an amazing like open educational resource, essentially. And there's a long history of zines and liberation work and cultural education and education like cultural like work. And I agree. I echo Elise's question. Like, could you give listeners? I know this audio format is not the best medium to talk about a visual text, but could you just describe a little bit more? Like,
yeah, I think of zines, short for magazines, I think of zines as sort of like print blogs. So if you think about like, okay, like publishing, right? Not everyone has access, or I mean, access in all the different ways to being published in some way, but people have tons of knowledge about like lots of different things. And so I don't know when, I mean, zines in different forms have existed since forever, but I think a lot of like zine culture that I grew up with in the like 90s and early 2000s, and like you all probably as well, was this idea that's kind of like self-publishing. You know, the stereotypes are like, yeah, my work has a Xerox machine and I'm totally gonna like make hella copies on there and use their stapler too, because damn the man. And I'm gonna like distribute this information that I have to share with people. And I don't need a publisher and I don't need someone to tell me that I can. And the reason it makes me think of blogs is, you know, yeah, same, like for better or worse, self-publishing could get a lot of problematic information out into the world, but it also gets a lot of perspectives out there that are historically left out of conversations. So that's what a zine is. My zine will be, I have to figure this out probably later this year, but will be available in print form. And then it also has an accompanying website. And being the nerd that I am, I want to make it a multimedia experience. So there's also a Spotify playlist that is collaborative, so you could add to it and other fun stuff like that. So
there's workbook questions for reflection, lots of things. It's interactive.
Yeah, exactly. And so as far as the format, to your much long ago question, Elise. So the format that I laid out, so I started by just doing a lot of writing and writing about like basically just background on all these things. So the writing part has stuff about, like I talk about what is desire, what is somatics, talking about consent culture versus rape culture and kind of unpacking what those things are. And then the limitations of consent culture, like I just described, nuances. And then also just naming the fact that desire is complicated, like the fact that we live in a sex negative and yet sex obsessed culture. And so it's like, damned if you do, damned if you don't. And, you know, I have a line in here. Well, I actually don't think I can read that. But just talking about things that get in the way of accessing our desires. So shame, fear, aversions, power dynamics, trauma, pressure, and like just straight up like expressing desire, even to yourself, let alone to other people, is a very vulnerable act. And so just kind of like writing about all of that kind of stuff, and then how somatics can kind of play into it. And then I have a whole section of prompts to kind of help you tap into your body. And I mean, so the distinction that people tend to make is the difference between sensuality, which is literally things you experience through your senses, versus the erotic, which is like what turns your brain on. And so I have some exercises that are more focused on sensuality and some that are more focused on the erotic, but I think the erotic still lives in your body. Your brain is, surprise, still part of your body. Despite what, was it Descartes wanted us to believe? Screw that guy.
Indeed. Indeed. It was Descartes.
Yes.
What? We're still, you know, generations, centuries later, unlearning that paradigm.
100%. Yeah. Oh, that's the other fun thing about somatics that my teacher was telling us about, was like, even the term somatics, like someone needed to make up a word for this. Surprise, surprise. It was a white dude in the 70s. To describe like the reintegration of our brains and our bodies, because we had operated under the assumption, we, let me be very specific, white Western culture, had been like so convinced of the divide between our brain and our bodies. And, you know, fast forward to today, where our bodies are almost treated as something that just carries our brains around. So just, I think it's very important to name that there are many cultures throughout space and time on this beautiful earth that would find even this whole concept of somatics crazy, because it's obvious. Like, why do you have to come up with a word for it? Yeah, so I have a bunch of prompts in there for going through all this kind of stuff. And then at the end, I have a whole bunch of resources of like things that I reference in the zine, awesome people who are doing this work to follow, websites you can read, books, other zines, apps, all kinds of fun things.
Something that I'm struck by is just your ability to sort of like tune into yourself, your own stuff that's going on, but also like the relational aspect of this and how that even ripples out to like sharing information and sharing with community. And I'll say that like the very first moment that you and I met, we were at a party and we started talking about pleasure activism. And I think you said something about how you and your partner had like bought boxes of the pleasure activist book that you were sharing with folks. And I was just thinking about how so much of, from what I see, is like your ability to tap into community in sort of this like knowledge exchange way. And I'm curious about like what community means to you, or like queer friendship, because I feel like that has been a really big piece of like our sort of triad relationship. I'm curious if any thoughts come to mind with that.
Yeah. Oh, what is community? Oh, goodness. What is community in July 2022 when everything keeps getting canceled in my life anyway? Thanks, COVID. Yeah, I think as an extrovert, I think that's a part of it. I don't know. I think community is like putting energy out into the world and feeling it like envelop you like a hug. Yeah.
Sometimes physically, sometimes emotionally.
Right.
Are we experiencing that right now?
Yes.
We are, I think so. Warping space-time.
Yes, 100%. Yeah, and it's also, I think the illusion of individuality is crap. Is that on the bad word list? And, you know, yeah, I don't know. I've been getting into a lot of like spiritual stuff and like Buddhism. And I'm like, yeah, like we're not, no one is one separate entity. Like we're literally all part of everything all the time. But then also, I really love the kind of comparison to like mycelium. Like we are all one entity, and what we conceive of as Kelly and Elise and Susie, like we're just like the little mushrooms that like pop up to the surface, but like underneath, like we all need each other and like feed each other. We feed off of other things, the decay nourish of each other. Society.
The decay of oppressive systems.
Yes. Yeah, and queer friendship in particular, I mean, oh, I just love queers so much. Like just the verb queer, like two queer things is great. And I think it also, it's just about like what I was talking about earlier of like what we have been given is not enough, is never enough. We need to keep dreaming and imagining the possibilities of what could be and like living that out in our lives. And like one of the things I think about a lot in like the work that I do, like this project, is that I think one of my superpowers is that I am an enabler. And I see that as a positive thing. I mean, enabling could be a lot of different things, but yeah, something about like living my truth and being my full self gives other people permission to be that. And other people give that to me. You know, I'm not the origin of anything, obviously. There's a very long shout out list in the zine of all the inspiration that has come through me. And I think that's a big part of queer community and queer friendship too, is to just, to both like see each other in as our whole selves, and also see the magic that sometimes, because of, you know, experiences of oppression, we have a hard time seeing in ourselves. And to just like reflect that back to each other. I think that's queer magic right there.
There's definitely something particularly queer about like role modeling and like becoming sort of the butterfly that you wished you had seen when you were younger.
Yeah.
Definitely very queer.
Yeah. I was actually just working at a summer camp this past couple weeks, and Pride was the weekend right between. And so of course I like came in to the next week of camp with like so much glitter in my hair. And this one little like 5 or 6 year old girl comes up to me and is just like, why do you have glitter in your purple hair? And I was like, don't tell anyone, but I'm a unicorn disguised as a human. And it just broke her brain. And for the rest of the week, she was like, "Hi, unicorn," and waved at me. And I'm just like, yeah.
You have to be the unicorn you want to see in the world.
100%. Yeah. I'm like, you can grow up to be a unicorn too. Just so you know, it's an option.
You also have great glitter. Whenever we've like gotten dressed for events, you bring like the whole burlesque outfit making machine.
Oh, yeah.
It's great.
I do love to dress my friends. That is also part of queer friendship. 100%.
Absolutely. Well, at the risk of cutting us off too soon, is there anything you want to share with listeners in our last like 30 seconds? Any plugs or things that you're feeling most excited about that you cannot possibly contain for our part two of this next time?
Oh, as long as there's going to be a part two. Yes. The only other thing I wanted to share, which I should have looked up, was just the URL that I purchased for this. The website where you can find more information about this zine. You can download it, print it if you have those things, or look at it on your various devices, is sparkfirezine.com. That's perfect. Pretty great. And I'm looking at this email and realizing that I also at the same time bought seriousfunsocial.club. So I think we need to do something with that.
That might be the not safe for work.
I think we might have to have a seriously fun social club.
That's fair.
I think that's where I was going. Absolutely. With that. So yeah, I guess my closing remarks, if I can sneak those in there. So my closing remarks are that you are entitled to desire things for yourself in your life, with or without other people. Having desires does not make you greedy, selfish, or needy, or desperate. And sharing your desires with the world is how we change the world. I believe in you.
Mic drop. Nice.
You've been listening to Outsources on KGNU Boulder, Denver. I'm Elise Matital, and I've been speaking with co-host Kelly Drumright and our dear friend and fellow pleasure activist, Susie Grishpol. For more information about Susie's zine called Spark Fire and their nonprofit, The Body Political, you can visit news.kgnu.org and click on Outsources under the Shows and Features tab. As always, let us know if you have comments or feedback about today's show by emailing outsources@kgnu.org. Join us next week, Monday, at 6:30 p.m. for another episode of Outsources, providing you homegrown queer radio every week. That's Monday, 6:30 p.m., right here on KGNU, or listen anytime after the broadcast at kgnu.org/outsources.